Happy Friday, people. Welcome. It's Friday, June 12th. Adam Azer with Scott White. And Al Melchior will help you set your lineup for next week. And plenty more. Good morning. How's it going, guys?
Good morning. Happy Friday, people, by the way, is one of my favorite R.E.M. songs.
Is that like a sequel to Shiny Happy People?
Yes.
Oh.
Happy Friday, people.
I bet
automatic
you,
for the people.
Right? I bet you hate Shiny Happy People, Al.
I don't hate it. I think I like it more than a lot of people do. But yeah, it doesn't, if I were to, you know, rank my favorite R.E.M. songs from first to last, it would be near the bottom.
You guys watch any? Have you watched 1 second of the NBA Finals?
Not 1 second.
Yeah, not 1 second. And I was listening to a bunch of analysis on radio from our own Zach Harper, by the way, this morning, which was excellent and made me regret not having watched any of it yet.
Yeah, it's been a very good finals. Last night was a bit of a dud, but I encourage you to watch. Now, let's get into the show. Today we'll talk about Chichi Gonzalez. Try to take a look at Tommy John surgeries and people who have come back mid-season and what their numbers have looked like, although it's a bit of a tough exercise. Devin Mesoraco news, some splits, righty-lefty splits, home-road splits, and what they mean for fantasy. We'll look at the most added players, perhaps the most dropped players. We'll help you set your lineup for next week and talk DFS if we have time. We're also going to try to solve the mystery of why someone might not play high school baseball. So let's hear it from D. Gordon. D. Gordon on why he didn't play high school baseball is told to Vice Sports. Quote, "It looked boring, and girls didn't go to games. High school basketball games, the girls were there. Football games, the girls were there. I was like, ain't no girls at the baseball games, why should I play baseball? We didn't grasp the concept of it."
Was it Rendon who said he thought baseball was boring to watch?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing thinking back how many decisions you made at that age that were based on, well, what do I think the girls will think of this?
So you mean that changes at some point?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I guess maybe when you get married, you're not trying to attract girls anymore. So
no, but now it becomes, what will the girl think of this?
That's true,
right?
Yeah.
But you have a
clearer idea what that is, I feel like, when you can narrow your focus down just to one.
Kind of interesting, because I felt like the girls, maybe not in high school, but the girls I knew in college just loved the baseball players. I feel like baseball, maybe you have to wait until college, but then it could pay some real dividends.
Yeah, you know, that's I think that's true. I don't know, maybe Gordon, there were some blinders on there, I don't know.
Yeah. Or just, you know, the timing just wasn't right. It worked out for everybody.
Sure did. Let's get to some news here. Shane Victorino could start a rehab assignment soon. So, is Rusne Castillo droppable?
I don't really see that, no. Maybe in a shallow league.
Okay, I wonder what they're going to do with Victorino. They still need some hitting from their outfield.
I'm not expecting him to be the source of that.
Zach Cozart is out 9 months. He needs knee surgery. Are there any interesting replacements for Cincinnati at the shortstop position?
Eugenio Suarez is the replacement.
The correct pronunciation.
Yeah.
I just saw it yesterday.
Yeah,
oh,
you
it's
have to
Eugenio?
Get that E, the syllable.
No kidding.
Yeah, you do. I'm not kidding.
Interesting.
I mean, unless Baseball Reference is kidding, which...
The Indians themselves sent out, the Reds sent out a lineup yesterday with the... pronunciation.
Well, let's say you're totally screwed now in your league, deeper league maybe, and you need a shortstop. We've got maybe Hechevarria could be available. Wilmer Flores, these might be shallower leagues. How about Yunel Escobar? Danny Espinoza, is he shortstop eligible? I don't think he's shortstop eligible. Freddie Galvis, Jung Ho Gong, Chris Owings. Brock Holt's been playing a little bit more lately. He's actually shortstop eligible. Does anybody interest you? It's obviously, we know it's a bad position.
Sure. I guess some of those, some of them don't, like Escobar, have no interest in. I don't really have that much interest in Espinoza, but if Echeverria is available, I think I like him the best out of that group and going a little deeper. Gong's a good pickup. There was one other in there.
Brock Holt, it's just.
Holt, yes.
Yeah. He's what do not you, great, but.
What do you like about Echeverria?
I mean, I want to temper this because I'm not saying, you know, he's top 15, but you know, I just think that he will give you a decent batting average. Maybe he's not going to stay over 300, but I could see him being about 280 rest of the way. You know, a little bit of doubles power and, you know, some runs scored. I mean, nothing huge, but again, for the shortstop position, it doesn't have to be anything huge.
Yeah, I think you might want to make a trade for a shortstop if you really need one, but you probably didn't invest much.
Well, you said in the deep league, though.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, I'm not.
Somebody like Echeverria has a lot more value than a typical person you'd get off of waivers.
Right.
Suarez himself might end up being kind of interesting, and I'm not saying I'd take him over those guys yet, but he has a little pop for a shortstop. He had, I think, like 8 home runs at AAA and 200 at bats, and it's just somebody to keep an eye on as well.
Oh, I have good news. Dane Perry has written this year's version of the 25 best names of the 2015 MLB draft.
Oh, man, that was loaded with material for that.
In last year's 25 best names, it was one of the funniest things I read all year. I loved it.
So it broke the internet.
So this year,
it probably didn't, but yeah, probably it's fun to say. Yeah,
this year
Swanson was probably like a third team qualifier.
Oh, he can't be on here. Oh no, he is. He's a number 11.
Yeah, it's a strong name.
Dansby Swanson sounds like parliamentarian with perfect hair and a loose hold on his basest urges. What? His marriage is one of convenience without actually being all that convenience. Dane Perry is one of the funniest and weirdest people I know, and I encourage you to read his blog.
That's a basis for like a whole screenplay right there.
Yeah, it's very good stuff. Okay, anyway, back to the news. The Yankees called up Mason Williams. Any interest in him? Outfield prospect Mason Williams.
I feel like he kind of stopped being a prospect at some point a couple years ago. 0 home runs in his 200 something at bats in the minors. So I'm not that interested.
The Nationals place Ryan Zimmerman on the disabled list. So any third base options you might want right now with Zimmerman on the DL with plantar fasciitis?
Well, I think it depends on the format. I know I've spent more than enough time talking about Giovanni Urshela, but I don't think I'd be picking him up in a 12-team league, but probably anything deeper.
Well, you know who Chris Towers and I would encourage people to pick up in a 12-team league is Michael Franco, who's still not as owned as he should be.
Michael Franco it is. Corey Dickerson off the DL. Devin Mesoraco left yesterday's rehab game with soreness. He was playing left field, and now the Reds are evaluating if Devin Mesoraco can hold up in left field. Keep an eye on that. Miguel Gonzalez is on the DL with a groin strain. Mike Wright could start for Baltimore. I don't remember if I asked this recently or yesterday or 2 days ago, ever, but Kevin Gausman, what does the future hold for Kevin Gausman?
That is a good question. And they keep going back to Mike Wright. So I'm not, I'm thinking the future isn't near for Kevin Gausman.
He's on a rehab assignment and he was starting.
Yep.
So maybe he's just not ready.
Do you think
I saw something. Don't want to say it was a setback, but something about something not going well in that rehab assignment.
Oh, great.
That's very
unhelpful. That is
fake.
Come on. Yeah. Come on, Al. I'll see if I can find something clearer.
Quick. And while Scott's looking for that, if it is not right, because he could be used out of the bullpen.
That's not right.
Then it would be Tyler Wilson.
All right, quick bullpen stuff here. Look at the Rays. Kevin Jepsen and Brad Boxberger both pitched yesterday. Jepsen struggled. They pitched in the 7th inning. So McGee did not pitch. This was a 6-2 loss, I believe, to the Angels. They were trailing when the Jepsen and Boxberger got in the game. And does this say anything to you about Jake McGee?
Yeah. It says to me that he's probably going to get the bulk of the save opportunities, if not all of them.
Would you rather Carson Smith or Jake McGee?
Well, if that's true, McGee. Because I don't think anything's clear with Smith. But I'm not as confident in this. I know Jepsen's not going to close for Tampa Bay. I think I'm willing to go that far. But I could see Boxberger, them saving him for the best right-handed batters in the 9th, if that's what it was shaping up to be. I don't know. I just want to see more with that.
And Hector Rondon got the save last night for the Cubs. So would you drop Rondon for McGee or Boxberger or or Carson Smith, or would you keep Hector Rondon?
I think I would drop him for Smith.
Really?
Yeah, I know that there's no, you know, official closer in Seattle right now, but I think once Rodney was out of the way as McClendon's, you know, clear selection as closer, I just think it's Smith's job to run with. So I actually think out of this whole group of relievers we're talking about, he's the one who's got the best chance to stick a closer.
FanDuel. You know, we got the Splitsville section coming up on today's show. I gotta buy into it more. You know, yesterday, I think, Al, you mentioned Jeff Baker. Al, I'm guessing you had a good day with FanDuel.
Actually, no, I didn't. It was frustrating because I had, you know, a lot of good, values, but they were kind of split among different lineups. So I just, fell short everywhere.
Well, you did a good job giving us advice on the podcast and picking players who were good in terms of splits. I'm not sure if you or Chris, I think one of you mentioned Danny Echevarria, but he hits lefties well, and Jeff Baker hits lefties well, and this stuff really helps. So keep an eye on that with FanDuel. But let me tell you about FanDuel. If you're not playing it, get on there and start playing right now. And of course, watch Daily Fantasy Live at 6 p.m. Eastern to get your advice. 6 p.m. Eastern on CBSSports.com, Daily Fantasy Live. You're going to pick a brand new team any day you want. There's no commitment. If you want to take a day off, take a day off, but get on there. Entry fees start at just $1. And there are no sign-up fees. So get on and win tonight and use our offer code, CBSPOD. If you're a new user, click the microphone in the upper right-hand corner at FanDuel.com. Use the code CBSPOD and sign up now. We love FanDuel. We want you to use that code. If you do, they're going to match your first deposit. Every dollar you deposit, up to $200, it's going to get earned as you play if you use the offer code CBSPOD.
And I think congrats are in order for Scott, because you've finished first last night, right? In our
In our show competition, which is the five people. I had a good night. I won all my 50-50s and
all right,
cashed in a few tournaments.
DFS MVP.
It's a lot of letters.
Got to be Garrett Richards. I mean, I didn't get cued at starting pitcher because there didn't seem to be any options that were worth getting cued for.
So
started Garrett Richards everywhere. And
you didn't go the Tanner Roark arc route like me.
Not enough strikeout potential for me. And strikeouts are so important in FanDuel because mm-hmm. it's a point each and there's so few things that actually earn you points.
Yeah, Roark was a big letdown yesterday. Yesterday was not the most interesting day of baseball, was it?
No.
Yeah, it really wasn't. Like, you know what? I think I'm just going to call it a show, guys. I think... Just pack it up. We don't have anything to talk about.
We can look forward to week 11.
We can. And actually, I wanted to do a quasi-mailbag today, so we will do that. We'll read your emails at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. We will read your tweets. You can follow us on Twitter at CBS Scott White, at Al Melk, CBS, M-E-L-C, at Adam Azer, A-I-Z-E-R. What the heck is Chris's Twitter handle? C Towers CBS?
I'm 99% sure that's right.
Yeah.
Sea Towers. Look at them.
Climb them.
Heath Cummings, I think, is at Heath Cummings Senior, SR. You know what? Just search.
Heath Cummings Senior. Just search. Just type in the names. They'll come up. It's a whole sophisticated interface.
Yeah, it's very, very advanced technology. Okay,
what do you think about my idea of when Ryan Goins retires that he and Heath co-host a show?
Ah, that was a good one.
Thank you.
I like that one. Okay, what was the standout? Who was the standout for you last night?
All right, I've got one.
Yes.
Sean Markham. Markham down.
Well, actually, Al, I said last night, and he pitched in a day game, so you're 0 for 1.
Well, that's Scott's turn.
No, go ahead. Sean Markham with a good start, which surprised me. Go ahead.
Surprised me, too. He was very low on the list for me of a list of crummy DFS options yesterday, and I should have paid a little bit more attention to what Markham's done this season as opposed to what he's done in the past. And some of what he's done is familiar, which is he's allowing a lot of fly balls. But he's been getting the strikeouts this year, and I'm not exactly sure why or how. But, you know, so far so good for Markham, and I think that was probably his best start to date, but he's had a few good ones.
Okay, 6% owned Sean Markham. So what do you need to see to start picking up Sean Markham?
Well, I think I've seen enough now, certainly in AL only leagues and some pretty deep mixed leagues, but For anything else, I just want to see if he can sustain the strikeout rate because it's not been that many innings.
Mm-hmm. And I think there were some, like his, he had one horrible start, but I think he still struck out six in like three innings in it or something, which kind of skewed the strikeout rate.
Yeah, I'm looking at the great memory, and I'm looking at the game log right now, and that's right, 2 2/3 with six strikeouts, seven runs. But pretty consistently, 4 Ks in five innings, 6 Ks in 6 2/3. That start you mentioned, Scott, 5 5 1/3, 4 6 1/3, and then actually the one I don't have right in front of me is last night's, which I'll have shortly.
5 7, I believe.
Thank you. Yeah, 5 7, which is, you know, probably the lowest rate he's had in his start so far. You know, a lot of fly ball outs.
Scott.
That was a Mariners lineup too that has been doing nothing.
Yeah. Scott, stand out.
Well, let's talk about Andrew Cashner, shall we?
Did you watch that game?
Not the portion he pitched.
I'm going to tell you, he got totally screwed. I mean, he got so unlucky in the seventh inning, I think, where it unraveled for him. I'm not sure that they even hit a ball out of the infield against him and the Braves rallied.
Cashner?
Yeah, Cashner. And Teron.
Okay.
Both of them
got
unlucky. They both pitched a lot better than the numbers.
Well, that was two starts in a row for Teron, where, you know, he was cruising and they just left him in one inning too long. And I think the bullpen allowed a bunch of inherited runners to score.
Yes.
So it made it look a lot worse than it was.
Yes, but, you know, well, we can come back to Teron, but I wanted to bring up with Teron, the Braves do have the worst bullpen in baseball. So that could continue to happen.
Yeah, it's not a good bullpen.
Okay, go ahead with Cashner. I'm sorry.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I guess maybe he did have some bad luck there towards the end, but it doesn't change the fact that he was walking a bunch of hitters and not striking out anybody for the second straight start. 4 walks, 1 strikeout. The previous start was 5 walks, 2 strikeouts. So 9-3. When what made him look like, okay, it's a bad win-loss record, but he's going to come around because the strikeouts are way up and he's not walking anybody, and that's totally flipped now. And I just wonder, I feel like this happens sometimes where, you know, there's so much emphasis with mainstream media and within the game itself on win-loss record that, you know, the player keeps getting asked about his terrible win-loss record. And he gets it in his head, he's having this terrible season and needs to do something different. And he goes from pitching well to, like, he makes himself into a worse pitcher trying to solve a problem that isn't there. And I kind of feel like maybe that's happening with Cashner because the walk-to-strikeout ratio the last two starts is so out of character. Those would be, in my mind, his only two bad starts of the season.
Well, then can we just shake it off? And I'm looking at the game log in the seventh inning when the Braves finally got to him a little bit. He gave up 3 infield singles, a sacrifice bunt, and a sacrifice fly.
I'm not writing him off after two starts of this, but it's not the way I wanted to see him start trending.
Okay. So Cashner, is he a top 40 pitcher for you?
Just outside that, I think.
Okay. Can we talk about Albert Pujols? He had another home run, and now he has 17, and he has 11 homers in 23 games, and if you look at like the last 15 games, it's even more impressive. And I know we just talked about him a few days ago, but he's probably the hottest hitter in baseball right now. Not one of the hottest.
Yeah, no, he's really been on a power tear, and he keeps surprising me. You know, because I really came in with very diminished expectations, and then he kind of keeps raising the ante. I'm still not ready to move him up into the top 8 or 9 of my rankings because it's, you know, it's such a great position, but he's right there.
I do think the power is legit. I read somewhere recently that he was far and away the right-handed batter who was shifted on the most last year, and he sees that as a good thing because it tells him what's coming with the pitch, what the pitcher's going to throw him, and he's not willing to change his approach, et cetera, et cetera. So that, I was having a hard time reconciling the low strikeout rate with the low batting average, especially since he still had the power. But that makes sense to me. So I feel like a 260-ish hitter with close to 30 home runs is, which is what he was last year, and that's still what he is this year.
Chichi Gonzalez, 7 innings, 8 hits, 1 run, and 3 walks, 4 strikeouts at Oakland. Chichi Gonzalez is 57% owned. What do you think about that ownership?
I think it is too high. And I think he's in real danger if he keeps this going of being overowned and overrated.
Yeah, he's got a .42 ERA, but 8 walks, 10 strikeouts, and 21 and two-thirds. And, you know, Al, it kind of reminds me of Mike Wright, who despite his, you know, he got off to a really good start, and you just kept saying, not buying it with Mike Wright, and you were right.
So Wright actually did get strikeouts at first.
He did, but even then, Al was like, not buying it. So this is even a worse version of Mike Wright? Is that what we're saying?
I'll say better, actually. I mean, I know the strikeout-to-walk ratio is pretty bad so far. I do think he's got more upside than Wright does, and, you know, given that he's just made 3 starts, you know, we saw it with McCullers and with Rodon. I would not be surprised at all to see those peripherals improve the longer he stays in the rotation, but the fantasy stats will probably get worse.
I don't know that I'd give him. I mean, I do agree he has more upside than Wright. Gonzalez was a prospect, actually, but he was like 5.5 strikeouts per 9 at AAA. And we at least saw, I mean, McCullers and Rodon were getting strikeouts from time to time. I just don't know that he's ready yet. I don't know what the problem is, but I don't think, I don't see owning him in fantasy this season.
Who, Chichi Gonzalez?
Yes.
Okay. Then let's talk about Tommy John surgeries, because we have a number of pitchers. Well, a number. We have a pretty good amount of pitchers ready to come back. Got Ivan Nova, Jose Fernandez, Patrick Corbin. Am I missing anyone?
Matt Medlin.
Matt Moore, Chris Medlin. I was trying to find pitchers who made midseason returns from Tommy John surgery. I don't know. It wasn't really that easy to find. You know, Jordan Zimmermann did, but it was a late season return. He only threw 31 innings, had a .494 ERA in 2010. Jorge De La Rosa was terrible in 10 and two-thirds innings in 2012. Mike Pelfrey was bad when he came back, but he was bad before his Tommy John. So I really don't think I was able to find anything significant, except what I did find was that the pitchers who took a year off, like Matt Harvey and Pineda, took a lot of time off. Those guys seemed to have more success. But I didn't look at every pitcher who had Tommy John. It was really a flawed study, and I apologize. But
it was a waste of time, Adam.
It may have been. Are there any conclusions that you guys think we can draw and any expectations we can have for these pitchers who are making the Tommy John recovery? And I was inspired by this, but I think is unfounded fear about Matt Harvey having this Tommy John hangover or whatever that some people are talking about.
I just don't recall, and I know I'm not answering your question, but the Tommy John hangover thing, I find perplexing, because I just don't remember that coming up with any of these other pitchers that you mentioned.
I've heard that before, where they don't have the command right away. And I think it was an issue with Jordan Zimmermann, maybe.
And it may have been with Wainwright, too, because Wainwright was not good in his first year back.
Yeah, his whole first year was messed up.
Yeah, I still don't know how to read the tea leaves on that one, because Wainwright's peripherals were really good that year. They were typical Wainwright peripherals.
Well, doesn't that remind you a little bit of Harvey? Great peripherals, but Harvey's still got much better numbers than Wainwright had.
Yeah, I don't know how to fit Harvey into this whole thing because he was dominant to start out. And I mean, dating back to spring training, he was dominant then too. And then, so now it's a problem all of a sudden.
Right, that's why
that's
I think it's garbage.
Yeah.
I think it's hogwash. Well, then back to the question about the midseason guys. Are you lowering your expectations at all?
Well, I mean, I don't know what everybody's expectations are. I'm treating it like if they come back and they're as good as we know they can be, it's going to be a nice bonus. I'm not stashing them on my DL spot expecting them to be the savior of my pitching staff, because I don't think you can count on them being immediately back to form. I do think it's it's a good thing that I think in every case that none of them are trying to rush back just a year later. They're going a little beyond a year, and that I feel like that's made a difference in the past, and I didn't do any kind of study of my own, but just going off memory, I feel like that helps. So we'll see.
That'll be interesting. Ivan Nova says he feels like he has a new arm, which is neat.
I don't even know how you could feel like that.
Well, I would like new arms that were a little more muscular than mine.
Mm-hmm.
Would not mind that at all.
It would be so disproportional to your body that I think you'd regret it.
I don't know that I would. I'm embarrassed sometimes to wear t-shirts. Because I have these like twigs coming out.
You could take the arms that you actually have and just build them up.
No, that's not happening. I've had 31 years to do that, Alan. That is totally never happening. Would you rather have Steven Matz than any of the Tommy John guys other than Jose Fernandez?
No.
Yes.
All yeah. Right. Okay.
Yeah, and he said other than Jose, so
I'd put Corbin. Well, I'd actually more ahead of Corbin. More and Corbin ahead of him.
Okay. Well, that was a worthless exercise. I apologize for that. Emails and tweets, part one. We'll do some more later. J-Rod says, I demand a 5-minute haiku in honor of Urshela from Al Melchior on the podcast tomorrow.
That's going to be a very slowly read haiku.
What, can you come up with one in the next 30 seconds or so?
Yeah, because it's 17 syllables, right? Is that right?
5 syllables, 7 syllables, 5 syllables on Giovanni Urshela, who had his first major league hit and then his first major league home run yesterday.
Yeah, that's like 3 syllables a minute.
Yeah, so don't worry about the time, but come up with an Urshela haiku and let me know when you're ready. Next email's from Nick. Dear Strike Team, the Barn, and the Money Train. This is a Shield fan. Good for you, Nick. I have Buxton in a minor league spot. Wondering if you have any info on whether or not he might get called up and what you project this season from Byron Buxton.
Well, I do expect him to get called up at some point, especially I think the longer the Twins are in the running, the more it helps his case. I would guess it wouldn't be until after the All-Star break. And now looking through some of the more recent updates, there was an update in mid-May. It could come in August. That was based on a John Heyman report, and really haven't gotten any updates since then. So I'm going to go with that. August.
Not Tim. Okay, go ahead, Al.
I'm ready.
Oh, all right. Let's go. Giovanni Urshela haiku from Al Melchior. Begin.
Chisenhall was doomed. Urshela summoned at last for his bat and glove.
Urshela summoned at last. Hey, very good, Al Melchior. Very
Thank
good.
You.
All right, here's a tweet from Not Tim Tuffle at the Tuffle Shuffle. For the podcast, Morales or Moustakas?
Forever?
Mm-hmm.
Moustakas.
Would you drop Chris Carter or Mark Trumbo for Ozuna?
No, I don't think I would.
Me neither.
From Luke, he wrote this in all caps, so I will try to convey that. I don't know if I can do that.
Is there a chance Betances steals the closer's job from Miller while he is hurt?
Thank you, Scott. Is there a chance Betances steals the closer job from Miller while he is hurt? So he wants to know if he should drop
that, Adam.
What?
Why did you read it again?
I don't know. 10-team, 2-closer, head-to-head league. He wants to know if he can drop Miller, but... You know, his, whatever, that's a very specific situation.
Can't drop Miller, but yes, there is a chance. Because, you know, Betances is good.
Yeah. And forearm, I'm kind of scared of this for Miller. Forearm injury for a pitcher who throws as hard as he does. I just feel like the recent history of that is not good.
Really? Well, it's kind of like what Tanaka had, though.
Yeah.
Tanaka didn't have a...
Yeah, he had...
It was more of a wrist thing, though, right? It wasn't...
They said he had tightness in his forearm. Miller said he just thought it was like fatigue. He was having trouble warming up. And it was, you know, it's another situation where it seemed like it was bothering him for a little while, and I don't think he said anything.
Yeah.
And then it got worse. So stop doing that, baseball players.
So who's the one? I guess it's Alex Cobb I'm thinking of is the most recent example.
You know what? It's like sometimes forearm injuries lead to Tommy John, and sometimes they lead to like
sometimes they don't.
A month on the DL.
Yeah.
So who knows? But yeah, I don't think you can drop. I don't think you can drop Miller.
No, I mean he was my top ranked closer before all this went down.
Yeah. Fantasy Guru says, should I drop Sandoval for Ken Giles in a 16 team league? I have Franco and Paredes.
No,
I'd rather drop Paredes.
Right, that's what I was getting.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
And Rich Lester in Queens. What's up with Colin McHugh? Is he still worth owning, Colin McHugh?
Yeah, he's still worth owning. I feel like this is my answer a lot today. I don't know what's wrong with Colin McHugh, but I've noticed it too. I guess everybody who owns him has noticed the ERA, but beyond that, the strikeouts just haven't been there like they were last year, and maybe I could check something on that, because it was written about a lot this spring how the curveball was the key to his success last year, how it has a much higher spin rate than the normal curveball, and the Astros encouraged him to throw it more, and that was the key to his breakout. So I'm just wondering if he's using that the same way he did in the past. I'd almost like to find out he isn't, because then at least we have an explanation and maybe he can turn things around. But
I think that's all worth looking into. I don't have an explanation for the strikeouts, but I'm looking at a 6-game stretch, because the start before that was a good one, and he has a 345 BABIP over that stretch.
So that
with a very normal line drive rate too. So,
but at the same time, I mean, he's still giving up a lot more contact overall. So, I guess
they're about the same. So it's I don't feel like I understand.
So why is there not as many strikeouts?
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, okay,
I don't know.
He's not throwing his fastball as much. The curveball is the same. He's throwing a slider a lot more. I don't know what any of that means. I would not. His stock is down in my eyes. I'm not starting him every week, but I'd still own him, yeah.
I think it's kind of interesting when you look at the players who came out of nowhere last year and how they've done this year. Maybe I'm missing some people. I just made a list. I just thought about this. But I think we're probably losing the battle so far. Dallas Keuchel, great.
Yep.
Josh Harrison, not as good as last year. But
I'd say. I mean, he's pretty fringy.
He's been fine. I think he might get better. He's gotten better. JD Martinez, as of now, top 30 outfielder, but probably a little disappointing.
Yeah, definitely.
Steve Pierce, terrible. Danny Santana's in the minors, and Colin McHugh is disappointed so far.
Mike Fiers, disappointing. Yeah, Matt Shoemaker, disappointing.
Yeah, what's going on
here? This is something I had noticed, yeah. It's
Jake Arrieta's really good.
Yeah, Arrieta is really good.
And, I guess the jury's still out on Garrett Richards. But in both of their cases, compared to a lot of these other guys, they were, at least going back to their minor league careers, they were once legit prospects. So maybe that's a differentiator between them and the McHughes and Fierses of the world.
Yeah, it's interesting. Definitely
I'm not too worried about Richards. I mean, I was very worried about starting him last night just for a one-shot deal coming off of two pretty poor starts. But based on what he did last night and then marrying that to what he did in the first 8 starts of the season, it's pretty much you take away those 2 starts and he's pretty much the guy he was last year. And I think if we can give Chris Sale, Clayton Kershaw, Corey Kluber a pass on a couple bad starts, I can do the same for Garrett Richards.
Now is the first time I'm going to say, let's speed up the podcast a little bit. We're going to Splitsville. Here are some players with interesting splits. Julio Teheran, 2 years in a row, much better at home. This year, 2.77 ERA at home, 6.94 on the road. Last year, 2.11 ERA at home, 3.68 ERA on the road. At least that was respectable. This year, just 6.94 ERA on the road. That is terrible. Somebody on Twitter, I'm sorry I don't remember your handle, but thank you for alerting me to these crazy splits. So, Teheran, wowzers. Is that an important split for you?
I got to say no, because, I mean, it's still at this point of the season, a little more than 2 months in, and you're splitting things. So, basically, it's a sixth of a season's worth of data in each side of the split. And I don't see any particular reason why Teheran would have those splits. And as a fly ball pitcher, he would seem to be the sort of pitcher that might have those kinds of splits, but Turner Field's pretty neutral. And it just strikes me as probably noise.
If I could slow down the podcast for a second, Adam, because I know you just talked about the importance of splits at the beginning of it. I feel like any season-long split is still too small of a sample size to judge. Because I've noticed this more. I mean, I used to look at splits a lot just for the weekly hitter column, but I've noticed it even more playing FanDuel and the emphasis we put on that every day. A player's splits can change so much from year to year that even within the current year, it's hard to know what to make of them, even if it seems like an extreme split.
I think if there's a reason behind it, I have more confidence.
You know? Right. Like what you were saying with a fly ball pitcher in a big park. That I understand that, yeah.
So, like, you know, Tom Kohler or Dan Heron at Marlins Park, I have more confidence in those splits.
Right. So what about Teron in general, then? What do you think about him?
Well, like I was saying earlier, I mean, the last two starts are going to... He pitched really well both times and ended up with a suspect ERA because bullpen allowed inherited runners to score. So I would feel good about him if I owned him, and if I didn't own him, maybe I might see the window to buy low on him as closing.
Jason Kipnis versus righties this year, 391, 479, 580 versus lefties, 253, 309, 414. And look, you're not going to sit Kipnis or start or, you know, do anything with the splits, but I just thought it was interesting. He's done so much better against righties, and Cleveland has the most at bats in baseball against lefties. So maybe even better things are to come for Kipnis.
Although this is a good example of why sometimes anecdotal evidence can be really misleading, because we had a string of shows on Daily Fantasy Live where we were saying Kipnis, as good as he's been, was too expensive, especially when he was facing a lefty, and it seemed like he kept on crushing the lefties. But, you know, obviously we were kind of magnifying, I think, a few times where he surprised us.
That's possible. And then there's two shortstops, Brandon Crawford and Adany Echevarria. Echevarria versus lefties, 385 batting average, 641 slugging. And Crawford versus lefties, 422 batting average, 733 slugging percentage. And he actually was very good all of last year against lefties.
Yeah, that's a two-year trend, so I buy it a lot more. And it's strange because he's a left-handed batter, so you'd think he'd feast on righties and suffer against lefties. But it's... I know I started him in most of my leagues last night, and
he homered.
And he homered, yeah. And FanDuel, that's the approach I take to him. He's facing a bad lefty. I want him in my lineup.
Well, he's also doing better against righties. I mean, respectable against righties. For a shortstop, a 250 average, 324 on base, 433 slugging. You know, if he can keep that up and still hit well against lefties, can Brandon Crawford be worth starting all year?
Well, looking at it from a season-long perspective, and this was something Al pointed out to me yesterday, so maybe I'm stealing his thunder on it, but going into yesterday's games, Brandon Crawford had the fourth highest fly ball, average fly ball distance of any hitter, period. Fourth highest. And nine home runs is a lot, but there's plenty of players with more than that that you would think would be adding to their average fly ball distances. So he's hitting the ball a lot further than he did earlier in his career. So I'm starting to buy into Crawford from a season-long perspective, like legitimately buy into him, not just, well, there's crap at shortstop otherwise, so you might as well hold on to him and cross your fingers it continues. But, yeah, okay, I could see him actually being this good.
And here's a stat that I like for Echevarria. Actually, I don't like it, but I like it in evaluating him. Since May 1st, it's batting 291. Hey, that's great. But 321 on base, 378 slugging.
So, that sounds about right.
Yeah. Echevarria, still a top eight shortstop, but probably not rest of season, right?
I don't think so. Yeah. It's very bunchy, you know. It's just, we keep saying this, but from about that eighth spot, seventh or eighth spot, down to, you know, the mid to low teens, I think any of those players could finish anywhere in that range.
I'm going to fly through two up, two down, rotation, fringy starting pitchers. Real quick here, Xander Bogaerts is two up number one. He is 17 for his last 40, but not a lot of power here. Just three doubles in that stretch and four runs scored. So despite an 11-game hitting streak, do you think Xander Bogaerts is droppable? He's 88% owned, or should we stash him?
If I had a better shortstop and I needed a roster spot, I don't think I'd be afraid to drop him because there hasn't been power, and for him to stand out, there needs to be power. I don't see him being like this league-leading batting average type who is going to sustain you on that alone.
Now we'll do one up, one down. That was one up. One down is Carlos Santana. I think I said this either last week or 2 weeks ago, but I do think you could really make a good case for him, especially in a points league, to be a buy low candidate. Looking at 2014 and 2012, really bad first halves, and then after the All-Star break, he was just an awesome hitter. So do you guys feel the same way about Carlos Santana?
Yeah, and I'm not sure that this is just something, you know, real for him, that he's just not a good first half hitter, but he is at minimum, you could say he's really streaky. So if you can catch him on the downswing, you're probably going to get really good value for him.
And he walks so much that he doesn't kill you even when he's not performing well, like now.
And fringy starting pitchers, Tim Lincecum is 79% owned. Is that too owned?
Yes. He is back to being hot garbage.
If you own Lincecum and you don't own Steven Matz, and Matz is available, you need to make that
roll out the welcome, Matz.
Beautiful.
Yeah, that's I probably stole that from Al too, subconsciously.
I think I was storing that one, so I should have used it sooner.
Beat you to the punch.
You were storing that one.
If you
some injuries. Andrew Miller, looks like a month is the estimated time frame for him. Nelson Cruz expected back today. Carlos Gomez could be back today or tomorrow. Billy Hamilton missed his third straight game with a hand injury. Brandon Phillips was out again with a groin injury. He's day-to-day. Joe Maddon sticking with Tsuyoshi Wada in the Cubs rotation. CSN Philly reports Seattle has interest in Ben Revere. You're going to hear a lot of reports from a lot of places about a lot of people over the next month or two. Or next month and a month or two and a half, I guess, with the August trades. John Heyman reports that the Mets don't see Aramis Ramirez as a good fit. And Baltimore outfielder Nolan Reimold homered against Boston. Any interest in Reimold? They just called him up.
Ale only for now, and of course, kind of kicking myself because I actually did think about playing him in DFS last night.
Me too. Me too.
Me three.
David Freeh sat again with the hamstring injury. Hey, look at the most added list. Most added players in CBSSports.com, and this is sorted by increase in ownership percentage, not just by ownership percentage. For example, Michael Franco is number four on the list. Vincent Velasquez is number one, but Franco is more owned than Velasquez. Velasquez, though, has seen a 52% jump. He's 55% owned. It goes Velasquez, then Chichi Gonzalez, and then Trevor May is fifth, and Steven Matz is sixth. We've got four starting pitchers. Velasquez, Chichi, May, and Matz. Who would you want to own? Give me your two favorites there.
I'd have to say Matz and Velasquez.
In that order?
Yep, in that order.
You're taking Matz over May?
I'm taking them both over May.
So?
Rest of season, yeah.
But I guess you feel like Matz must be close.
Yeah. I know there's a report about a week ago that he would likely be up before the All-Star break.
That's true. We are getting close to the All-Star break.
Yeah.
Hmm.
You know what? I'm not going to eliminate the possibility of Syndergaard having a couple more bad starts and being sent down.
I'm ruling that out.
You think so?
me three.
I think
I know the only one said it, but me three.
Nice get either gets dealt or sent to the bullpen.
Yeah, Nice is not that bad.
Oh, come on.
No, yeah, he really is not that bad.
If we're talking 2012,
I mean, he's not as good as Matz is going to be most likely, but
yeah,
I don't think he's that bad. I don't know that he's worse than Cologne.
There was a time when Nice wasn't bad, but that time is over.
I'm not saying for fantasy, by the way. Obviously, he's bad for fantasy, but I just mean in real life.
Cologne is not great either, but he's not bad.
Yeah.
Nice is bad.
I don't even think Dylan G is that bad. I think.
Yeah. You're living in the past.
I guess so. I'd rather be living in the future with the Mets.
And I think, just aside from, reports that have been out there, I think the logic suggests that we'll see Mats pretty soon, because I think the Mets are feeling some pressure to strike while they're in the hunt.
You got 187 and two thirds innings and a 3.40 ERA from Nice last year. That's all I'm saying. He's not that bad.
Yeah, I don't think peripherally he was looking so hot though.
No, he's not that kind of pitcher. I don't know.
But he's had years where the peripherals were solid and whatever. Yeah, we're getting too deep into an argument about Jonathan Nice.
Cameron Maybin is number three. He's 62% owned. Would you rather own Maybin or not a lot of outfielders on this list? Chris Colabello.
Maybin.
Yes, Maybin.
Maybin or Jay Bruce.
Jay Bruce.
Maybin or Souza.
Souza.
Yeah, Souza, but I had to hesitate on that one. Getting closer.
Joey Butler is number eight on the most added list.
Maybin
over. How about Butler or Colabello?
They are cut from the same cloth, but I will take Colabello because of, I think, a more power potential there.
Power, yes, Colabello.
Got Carson Smith, Joe Panik, Chad Bettis is on the most added list. We probably would disagree with that one. DJ LeMahieu, 81% owned. Anybody buying into LeMahieu?
Not at that ownership rate. No, I think that's about at least 20 percentage points too high.
To the most drop list. Mike Wright is the most drop player. Should people be picking him up again?
His ownership rate now is at 17%. I think it's corrected to pretty much exactly where it should be.
Caleb Joseph is number two. Makes sense. Jimmy Paredes, number three. Boy,
Orioles.
And they just swept the Red Sox. Zach Cozart, four. Vogelsong. Are you guys ready to drop Vogelsong? He had that really good stretch.
It wasn't good enough for me. Mm-hmm. And if I fell for it, I'd be dropping, I'm sure.
How about Ruby De La Rosa?
Yeah, he gone too.
Shane Green.
I feel like there's still something there with De La Rosa, but so many home runs. It's not looking good.
Shane Green on the most drop list. Jung Ho Kang is on the most drop list. I know it hasn't been great for him lately, and they're really doing their best to play everybody, which is annoying. But I feel like eventually he'll win out over Mercer.
I agree.
I agree with all that.
So maybe not a bad guy to stash. Kang is 43% owned.
A bad guy to stash.
Not a bad guy to stash.
A bad guy. No. You can stash him.
And Melky Cabrera is 68% owned now, down 8%.
Yeah, I'm okay with that too.
Okay then.
Melchior down on Melky.
Well, it's getting late, guys, and I haven't given you much time to give your hitting and pitching advice. Can you turbo it here?
I'm not sure I can, but we'll do what we can do.
Scott, how about you?
Okay. Here we go. So the first thing you need to know about this week is every team plays 7 games. No off days.
No.
Anywhere. I know. It's annoying for us. But in a way, it makes things a little more straightforward when choosing your hitters to start. So the best matchups this week are the Orioles, Brewers, Yankees, Padres, and Dodgers. The worst matchups are the Rangers, Twins, Rays, Pirates, and Diamondbacks. Now, here's the thing. Have you looked at the way the Dodgers have been putting together their starting lineups recently? Because I mentioned they were among the best matchups, and they have a lot of hitters owned in that 50 to 60% range, the guys I like to feature in this piece.
Well, they haven't had Turner healthy, so that's put Kiaspo in there.
Yep.
And then you've got Ethier sits against lefties now, right?
He's just sitting a fair amount.
Oh,
I don't even know there's a strict lefty-righty thing. They're just not. they're not as committed to him as I thought they were. And he would seem like a great candidate this week. Turner would seem like a great candidate if you could trust his health, but they're not. So, yeah, there's not really, I mean, maybe Jimmy Rollins, he needed a shortstop and he was available, but otherwise not a lot of guys I like there. Who I do like, are a couple players who weren't listed among the best matchups. Curtis Granderson has been swinging pretty good bat recently, and the Mets do have favorable matchups, even though they weren't among the five best. A lot of righties and homer-prone righties. I like Denard Span, a couple three-hit games since returning from injury, and they face a bunch of righties. He's better against them. Joe Panik, I think, he's still available in like 18% of leagues. I don't see how you don't start him right now. Now to touch on some players to sit. I mentioned the Rangers have the worst matchups. Not only are they the worst, but five left-handed pitchers, so Shinsu Chu's immediately out. I think Joey Gallo's out. Obviously, not much of a track record against lefties or righties yet, but young left-handed hitter who's striking out a ton. I wouldn't start him this week. The Pirates were among the worst, and they faced four left-handers. That actually affects a lot of hitters. Pedro Alvarez probably comes up to mind immediately. Neil Walker's been really bad against left-handers this year, and Gregory Polanco, he's the one I'm actually the most down on this week because he's so widely owned still. You can't start him with those matchups.
Al, pitching advice, if you would.
All right. Well, starting off in the same way that Scott did, so you got this packed schedule. So the first time in 3 weeks, it actually pays for you to go to waivers and find some two start guys because there's a ton, and there's a ton who are not widely owned. So in terms of guys that you have sit start decisions that you already own, I'm inclined to sit Anibal Sanchez, even though his last two starts have been much better. And he's not been as fly ball prone in those starts, but still not that strong. So and he's got the Yankees. The start against the Reds, especially if they're still trotting out kind of a substandard lineup like they did last night. That might be all right, but yeah, I'm not trusting Anibal.
How about Tehran at Boston, home against the Mets?
Yeah, I'm good with that, especially since he's got the Mets.
Okay.
If it works for Chris Heston, it works for Julio Tehran.
How about Chichi Gonzalez? Dodgers at home and White Sox on the road.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm staying away from that.
Staying away from that. All right, so who do you like? Who are some guys who are available that you might want to pick up?
All right. Well, we talked about Trevor May before, and he's got the Cardinals at Busch and the Cubs at home. I mean, those aren't, great matchups, but I don't think they're terrible. And, and he's talked a lot about how he's really improved. Only 37% owned, but so I think he should be a key target for a lot of owners. Vince Velasquez is still only 55% owned. He's got the Rockies at Minute Maid Park. And then versus the Mariners at Seattle, and of course the Mariners not scoring at all. So those are really good matchups. And Velasquez, of course, has a ton of upside.
All right, just say some names, Alex. We're already at 55 minutes.
So. All right. Even though it was terrible yesterday, Jay Happ, I think, is worth picking up. Same for Tanner Roark at Tampa Bay at home versus Pittsburgh. Scrolling. Charlie Morton, home versus the White Sox at the Nationals. He's one of your better pickup targets. And I don't mind Carlos Frias at the Rangers at home versus the Giants either. So I'd say those are the best options out there.
Cool. A few more emails, then we'll do some DFS for you. Watch Daily Fantasy Live at 6 p.m. Eastern. Jimmy S., rest of season, Grandal or Darnot in Roto?
I moved Darnot just ahead of Grandal.
And I have Darnot just ahead of Grandal, yes.
This is from Jeffrey Victoriano from the Dominican Republic. Rank these free agents. Pick up one if Pence goes on the DL. It's a points league. Kadire, Adam Eaton, Granderson, Revere, Maben, Pilar.
Well, for this week, I do like Granderson with those matchups, and it's close enough rest of season that, yeah, he'd be the one I'd go with.
That logic makes sense to me.
From Cameron, drop one outfielder in a Roto League. Sousa, Ozuna, Betts, or Chris Carter?
Ooh.
I'm thinking Ozuna.
I'm agreeing.
Yeah.
Is it crazy to drop David Ortiz for Will Venable or Mitch Moreland?
Yes, it is.
Crazy.
Certifiably.
From Philip, does having Derek Norris behind the plate have anything to do with Ross and Cashner's performance this season?
I mean, I think it's a small factor. It's not helping, put it that way.
And Nick in St. Louis, dear Doug, Skeeter, and Chalky, should I drop Samardzija for Velasquez?
No, I would not do that.
Have you guys looked at FanDuel yet?
Yes.
I will say that I had a very tough time putting together a lineup while paying a lot for a pitcher. So I put Felix in, mm-hmm. and I just had a lot of trouble with my hitters. So I don't know. There are a lot of aces going tonight, but I'm thinking about rolling the dice on Hector Santiago.
I thought about that, and the only issue there is that I think both of the pitchers and that start have kind of a nice matchup, so I could kind of see that going, you know, in either direction. Jesse Chavez, as long as he's in a pitcher's park, which Angel Stadium definitely is, and they both have easy matchups. So, yeah. In a way, I'm sort of staying away from both of them because it's hard to know who might pick up the W there.
Okay, so who did you like today, Al?
Felix is the guy that you got to go with in a cash league, even over Kershaw and Bumgarner. But I really like Hutchison at the Red Sox, and I know his stats are not really great overall. He's got really good splits against righties. The lefties and switch hitters in the Red Sox lineup don't really scare me too much. And I just think he's due to improve anyway.
I think he's had a really bad start at the Red Sox earlier this year, but I almost feel like we should throw away everything we've seen in the past from Hutchison if you're buying into the recent stretch.
Yeah, and I do. So, 8,200. I think that's a pretty nice price and allow you to get probably at least one or two more studs in your lineup.
If you want to pick on a pitcher and stack, Kevin Correa facing the Pirates, maybe?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
I like Freddie Freeman a lot. He's the 10th most expensive first baseman. He's 7 for 16 with 3 doubles against Bartolo Colon. And he's been very good at Citi Field over the last 3 seasons, and he's good against righties. Angelton Simmons is 8 for 15 with 2 doubles and a triple against Colon. He's very cheap, by the way. Yeah, go ahead, Scott.
Well, since you were mentioning the Braves there, one pitcher we didn't mention, Alex Wood at $7,400 against $7,800 against a Mets team that doesn't hit lefties well because lefty loaded lineup. So yep. I think as a tournament play, he's pretty good.
And I also wouldn't mind stacking against the Rangers and Wandy Rodriguez.
But he hasn't been that bad. Like, when are we going to learn our lesson with
Wandy? No, he's not been that bad, but he's not been that good. And the Twins are very, very good against lefties. So,
okay, that's a good point.
Yeah, I'd pay up for Dozier, get Plouffe in the lineup.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Maybe Kenneth Vargas. I think there's a lot of options there.
Mm. I like Christian Yelich at 2,500, 7 for 18 in his career against Kyle Kendrick. Kendrick is terrible against lefties.
So Kendrick is just terrible.
Yeah, he is. The lefties have 999 OPS against Kyle Kendrick. And I guess it's pretty much the only lefty. Is D. Gordon a lefty?
Yeah,
D. Gordon's a lefty.
But he's
so expensive. If you go with one of the Kershaw, Bumgarner, Felix, who else is on the mound tonight? One other ace.
Yeah.
Bumgarner.
Zimmerman. I don't know if that's who you're thinking of because there are several. Oh,
Price.
Salazar.
Salazar. Price, right. If you go with one of those aces and you want a bargain, maybe Yelich is a guy you go for. And I don't like Carlos Gomez tonight. A little banged up, and he's 0 for 12 in his career against Jordan Zimmerman, who also is interesting to me. Jordan Zimmerman a little bit cheaper. At Milwaukee.
Should go better for him than for Tanner Roark.
Well, it should, but I'm going to stress again, if I don't feel like I can count, or if I don't feel like a pitcher has potential for a big strikeout game, I'm not even going to bother with him, which I guess he does have potential, but for the price, it's not enough potential.
I would tend to agree with that. Okay, so again, we like Pirates. We maybe like left-handed Marlins. I like Freddie Freeman. We like some Twins, and they're good against lefties. And I think Gregory Polanco at 3,000, by the way, is a nice bargain. And even though Adam Jones is facing Michael Pineda, he's done well against Pineda, and he's only 3,200, and he seems to be coming around a little bit. So Pineda could have a very good start. I think he struck out 16 Orioles last time he faced them, but that doesn't mean Adam Jones can't have a good game as well. So
it doesn't. I'd be really afraid to start him against Pineda or anybody against Pineda, despite what the history shows.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, guys, thank you very much. And watch Daily Fantasy Live at 6 p.m. And that'll cover you. Have a great weekend, fellas.
All right, you too, Ed.
You too,
Ed. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
That's Scott White, now Melchior. I'm Adam Azer. You are a listener. And we will be back on Monday with more Fantasy Baseball.